Lee Carsley has been named, although I'm not sure.
He's not coming now, is he?
Well, that's the thing. Or Big Sam is the other one.
It's always Big Sam, isn't it?
OTB AM live weekday mornings from 7:30 on the OTB Sports app.
Time for us now to have a look back at the Republic of Ireland's draw against Serbia last night in the World Cup qualifiers. At this stage, Ireland with 2 points from their opening 5 games in Group A. Very unlikely that Stephen Kenny's side will be going to Qatar next year. But last night, huge performance from Gavin Bazunu in particular, his heroics keeping Serbia at bay, and then the most bizarre of own goals, rescuing a point for Ireland. They end this series of games with a comeback 2-1 defeat against Portugal, that drab 1-1 draw against Azerbaijan at the weekend, and a 1-1 draw against Serbia, who are now a couple of points adrift of Portugal at the top of the group. To look back on last night's game at the Aviva Stadium, we're joined by Jonathan Walters. Jonathan, how are you getting on?
I'm good, thank you.
I was watching the Sky Sports coverage and yourself and Clinton Morrison speaking about the game last night. So just in a bigger picture sense, now that we've had 16 games under Stephen Kenny, yourself and Clinton don't seem entirely sure that this style of football that he's trying to implement is going to get results.
I think I was watching it last night and I was frustrated at certain things at play watching it, because we hear a lot as fans, we hear a lot as, well, ex-players, you see it, and I'm watching the game, and I'm watching how Serbia play. I'll take Serbia as a good example. They play and they build up play, and then they control the game in Ireland's half a lot of the time. They're 1-2 touch, they're switching it from side to side, and they're dominating that area of possession. And really, that's what I thought we want to play like. That's what we want to be like, and it's... There is certain passages of play where Gavin starts in goal and we play to the centre half, we go to the right back, we come back out, but there's got to be more of a plan after that, because when we do attack, it seems to be we're going down one side, it's got to get a crossing, but there's just got to be, I think, a bit of build-up, a bit of patience in the play, and dominating teams a bit more. And I think it was a bit of frustration watching it last night, that saying that this is you know, we're a new identity. A new Irish team for the past 15, 16 games. This is how we're going to play. We're going to play possession football. It's going to be a team to be proud to watch. Everyone's going to want to play in it. And then there's a great example last night where I didn't really see us do that against a Serbian team that wanted to play as well. And then in other games as well, I haven't seen it as much. So I was sitting there thinking, I'm hearing things. I'm hearing how we want to play. I'm hearing that we want to have a possession-based game. We want to dominate teams. But I still haven't seen it enough. Or a long period of time, and I want to see it. I'm a fan. I want to see it. I want to see us do well. There's nothing more I'd want than Stephen Kenny, Keith, Anthony Barry, Dean Carley, that group of staff to come and do well, without a shadow of a doubt.
Well, look, you've got over 50 caps playing in the attack for the Republic of Ireland, so you can give me a good perspective on this. Is the issue with the passing more so in the final third than further back in the pitch? Because I think a lot of people praised how Ireland played out of the press against Portugal last week, and again at times against Serbia last night, very comfortable in possession when the team pressed up on them. But the issue seems to be that when it gets into the final third, it's still a case of getting it wide and just whipping crosses in from the wings.
I think so, and if you're playing one up front, it tends to be just Adam in the box, who was playing last night. But it's not just that. So say if you're building up from the goalkeeper, there's got to be a plan and a purpose with the pass. So if you go into the centre half, and we've seen it numerous times last night, we go to the right centre half, we come back, and we end up kicking it long, and it goes to Adam, and I felt very sorry for him last night, and I've watched him in 3 games he's played this week, and I think he's done exceptionally well in terms of his hold up play and his work rate and running the channels. But you almost feel sorry for him, because I've played in that position where it's quite lonely, because we are building up, but if we don't build up with a purpose and play through the lines and split them and play through the opposition's pressing, and we do kick it long, the whole team's back in our 18-yard box, and we've got to get support to him. And I found there was times last night where he's isolated a lot, and I think that was frustration as an attacker watching that for him, because he's such a young lad as well, and he's got a lot of work to do, and it's very difficult for him to shine in games like that, where as an attacker you want to be on the edge of the 18-yard box. You want to do your little two-yard movements, coming short, spinning long, making runs in behind. And as an attacker, that's what you want to do. You want to show your prowess, your finishing prowess, and you don't really get that many chances playing in the way we played last night.
For Adam Eda, it's also difficult, Jonathan, for him to get a good run of steam and a bit of form here, because Back at Norwich, he's unlikely to get a huge amount of game time because they're fighting for their lives in the Premier League. He's playing regularly for the Republic of Ireland, but he's not coming into any of these windows with club form, really.
It's a difficult situation if you're not playing at club level. It is. But I've been there, and there's plenty of times I wasn't playing regularly or was coming off the bench, but then had that just the energy to come and play for Ireland, the passion to come and play, and you're away for so many days, and it's a chance almost if you're not club level to show everyone what you can do. And I'll tell you what, he's done himself a world of good the past few games and how he played, because Norwich in the Premier League, you expect like a striker to be holding it up, to be playing, and playing against, you know, he's playing against world class players as well. He's playing some very good defenders in the Portugal game and yesterday. So, you know, he's done himself a world of good, but it can be an issue moving forward, especially for other players if they're not playing. But as I said, when I spun it on the head, and people used to say that, I wasn't always playing at club level, and when I came away, I always looked after myself well enough that I could play the games and I could play them at high energy.
Yeah, he's a player who's got a lot of potential. Other attackers with potential, this window hasn't really happened for them. Aaron Connolly, we were discussing last week with Stephen Hunt that Stephen thinks that Aaron Connolly has to be given time, that his composure is going to improve with experience. But we saw him snatch at a few chances, almost try a little bit too hard against Portugal last week, and he had the injury, so he wasn't able to play last night. What's been your take on Aaron Connolly for a guy who, about a year ago, really announced himself in the Premier League?
We were watching that game last week. I was away with the under-19s. We were watching the game, and Aaron, and he did ever so well to get in the positions. He's still a young player, and as young players, there's at some point you've got to be taking the chances when you get to a certain age, and you're not classed as a young player anymore. But as a striker, you're always told if you're getting into those chances, the positions to get chances, if you're playing yourselves in those positions to get your shots off, it'll eventually come. So it'll be more work on your finishing when you go back to the club. I'm sure he is anyway. It's not for me to tell him. But as long as he's in those positions to get the chances and he looked dangerous, and although some things he'll give it away, he's a young player. He's still running the players. He's still trying to beat players. He still does things where he gives the ball away, maybe in the wrong areas. But you're a young player. You're still learning, and it's great exposure for him to have. And probably last night you'd say it's a little bit of a miss there that you didn't have that maybe a bit of pace on the break. That if you are sitting back and the transition from defence to attack, we just need to be a bit quicker with. Because look, for the Premier League, for example, the transition in football nowadays, what, Premier League or European leagues, 4 or 5 passes, it's a goal. If you can get your passes off quickly and teams can break, a lot of goals are scored within that 4, 5, 6 passes sequence. So you need that pace on the break. You need the purpose. You need people to break. So he was a bit of a miss last night. As I said, I felt sorry for Adam playing on his own.
A bit of a frustration, I think, with the Azerbaijan game at the Aviva on Saturday too, where that final third hasn't quite worked itself out with combinations just yet. And some of it has been outside the control of the management team, with Callum Robinson missing games with COVID-19 and players being injured and not available at the same time. But we got to see Paris up alongside Ida with Connolly on Saturday. And while we're all very excited about the three talents, they seem to all kind of get in each other's way, Jonathan, as well. They all wanted to go into that number 9 channel. None of the three really played in a number 10 position, which didn't help when we were trying to attack on Saturday.
This is a little thing that gets me a little bit, because obviously the under-21 players have come up from the under-21s. They should know how the manager wants to play the same way. They would have played together numerous times. Whether you'd like to see two up front maybe for a change, it depends how the manager wants to play, but they should know the system, where to make the runs, how to play. And a lot of those players have come through from the under-21s, and it's great to see. It's great to see young lads coming through. And there was a graphic last night of the young players, Omar Bamadeli, Bazuna, Ida, Jay McGraw, Aaron Connolly, Troy Parrotton. I would like to see him last night. But if they've played together from under-21s, it is a big step up. It's not just going to work at under-21 level. Maybe we're going for the same plan as what England did with Gareth Southgate, work at the 21s, bring them through to the first team. And it's great. It's fantastic to see these players coming through without a shadow of a doubt. But at some point, it's got to become a results business. When you're qualifying for games, when you're playing Azerbaijan, when you're playing Luxembourg, they're games you've got to go and win. There's no, you know, we've been unlucky, we've been this, we've been that. We're missing players. Every country's going through the same problem over the past 18 months. Everyone's had to deal with the situation. At some point, there has to be results. Because if we are building a team, and it's obviously the first we heard about it last week, that we weren't aiming for this campaign. We're aiming for the next campaign. As a fan or as a player, you're thinking, well, I want to qualify for this campaign. If you go back from 2016, 2018, in our groups, 2016, we had Germany, we had Poland. We came third on 18 points. I think we lost to Poland on the last game of the season, last game of the group, to not come second. And then go to 2018, we finished second behind Serbia. We came ahead of Wales, we came ahead of Austria. So results, you can get results. Results can be done. Results, they need to come, especially in qualifying campaigns. And there's a fine balance between building a team and getting the results. But when you are saying you're building a team and you want to see the team go and play and dominate teams, I still haven't seen it enough. I still haven't seen it against Azerbaijan. I still haven't seen it against Luxembourg. Portugal, you can say we beat the press. If you look back at the game of Portugal, which I've watched twice over again, Portugal is still in first gear in the first half. They got players not running back. They got players. We should have took the game away from it 2-0. But we still got beat. We still got beat at the end of the day. It still wasn't a result. It was still, I'm still hearing we're nearly there. We were so unlucky. But at some point, that's got to turn into results. At some point, you've got to say, well, we need that result. It's not about being unlucky. It's about putting away games. And whether you point to the age of the players or not, but those players then have got to grow up quickly into senior football, and I've got to learn, and I've got to adapt to the fact that it's not a Premier League. You can't get away with missing these chances. You might get one chance a game. You might need to put them away. You might need to put teams away. You need to dominate possession. And there's nothing more than I'd want to see as an Ireland fan. I work with the under-19s, and it's so good to be able to turn around and say to them, "There's a pathway for you in the senior team here." There's got lads in the under-21s there. You've got the likes of Andrew Moran, who's just made his debut. You've got Connor Coventry. You've got even someone below the under-21s who wasn't away last time, Boston, who's just gone to Celtic. These are players that have got great ability, that can come through, and it's great for them to see a pathway. But at some point, there's got to be a result to the seniors as well, because there's no point if you're not getting the results and your seeding drops, it's going to become harder and harder to go into the right pots to qualify, because you're going to go in the third, the fourth pot, and you're going to come up against some very, very difficult teams in the group.
When it comes to that pathway, are all of the teams being instructed to play in a similar way to the senior team now? Like, Jim Crawford's style with the 21s is not too dissimilar to the way the seniors are playing, but you can give us a view here on the 19s. Are you guys trying to coach the 19s in a similar way to the way that Stephen Kenny is playing the senior team? Or is that kind of connectiveness there right down to the underage sides?
I think, well, Tom, who's the coach, the manager of the under-19s, he's a fantastic coach. And it's a hard one because they've missed a year in international football. So I think they've seen 150, 160 players over the past few months. So they're trying to whittle down the squads, and when you play the games, you're giving them an idea of how to play out the back, how to have a rotation of the field, how to have your fullbacks bombing on, the movements of the strikers. So I think it's more with what you've got, what sort of players you got, what system suits them. Have we got a left fullback that has ridiculous pace? Have we got a number 10 that can get on the ball? And you'll play to how you want to play, but football's football. It's giving people ideas, it's allowing them to go and play. But when you come to a match, no matter how you play, if you're winning 1-0, then you defend and you work for each other, you get your shape, you work off that. But then it's having the freedom and the energy to go and play. And still last night, that's why I was frustrated last night, because I felt we had James right back, we had Matt right back, we were defending really, really deep, and we were trying to get up to Adam. He was isolated. And, you know, as a football person, in my coaching, and I want to go on to coach and manage, I'd like to see a team that'll press high up, that'll have people that are pressing their centre-halves, winning the ball back on the edge of their 18-yard box, winning the ball back in their half. It was nothing more demoralising as a player, and I played it plenty of times, and the majority of time for Ireland as well. I'm an attacker. I played the majority of my time in a right-back position or a left-back position or on the edge of my box, and we had to break from there, or we'd go up and hit it long. I always say to kids, my son's 11 as well, and I say to the 11-year-old, I say the same to 19-year-old, where do you want to win the ball back? You want to win the ball back in their box. You want to win the ball back in their half. So go and press them. If they beat the first man, Thomas Muller last year, he was describing how his team press, and he said, it's okay, because when I press, if I get beaten, I know the next person's coming to press behind me. If he gets beaten, the next person's coming to press behind him. And as a fan, as an ex-player, that's what I want to see from the Ireland team. I want to see high energy, high pressing, get the fans off the feet, especially at home. But I just felt we were too deep last night. I just felt we were against a good Serbia side. But if I want to see us progress and I want to see us play this good football, dominate possession, go and press them on the front foot. Go and be a front foot team. Get the fans off the seat, because when the ground's rocking, it fills you with confidence as a player. There's nothing worse than sitting on your edge of the box and trying to win the ball back.
When it comes to changing that style, is it possible for a senior management team to do that? You've been at camps previously. I was chatting to Matt Doherty last week, and he was saying really the only prolonged period of time that this squad have had together was the summer when they went away to Spain and they got a bit of time to work together, because he said every other window they were preparing for three fixtures and it was a very quick turnaround. It was tactically getting ready for the opposition and there wasn't a huge amount of time to be able to make sweeping changes on the football pitch. Can a senior management really have that much impact when they only have players for very short windows?
Yeah, but we've had 15, 16 games. It's not just a short one short window or two short windows. I think when the manager came in, this was the frustration last night. It was like, we're going to see a team to be proud of, which growing up, I was always proud of the Irish team. I was always wanted to play in that team. So, but I want to see the identity of the players, and you have got time when they're in, you're in. And you need enough training every day. There's not many days off when you're in. It's not an easy go away camp. You train every day, and there's ideas that be given to players. You've got a lot of time with them, so whether that be going through clips in the evening, whether that be going through with the analysis Jay done, whether it be going through how do we want to play, get the forwards in, get the midfielders in, get little passages of play. There is time to work with players, and then when you're playing, I'll say the lesser teams, teams that you should be beating, Qatar, Luxembourg, Azerbaijan, these are the teams you should go and impose yourself and show what you're doing on the training pitch. Because if it is a campaign where we are just writing off, then go and play. There's freedom to go and play. Go and show what you can do. Like last night at half time, I was sitting there and we were 1-0 down. I was thinking, just come out second half and show everyone how you can play. I think there was all talk of the manager being under pressure before. If there was one half to go out and show what you can do, and you've got nothing to lose, because the Irish fans want to see it. The Irish fans want to be off the seat and want to see.
Well, they did get off their seats for the last 10 minutes or so. I think when Ireland really went for the end, they got energised then.
But how do we go for it in the end? If you're sitting there and watching as someone watching the game, how do we go for it in the end? What were we doing in the end of the game?
It was back to probably how we would have played in a lot of the games where we got results previously against better teams. We relied on good defensive blocks, a goalkeeper making saves, and then getting the ball into the box late on and trying to nick something.
Exactly. So it was putting Shane Duffy up there, getting the ball in the box, and making something happen. I'm not saying that's the way to play, but I'm saying that's what got the fans off the feet at the end. So one passage of play for me, we had a free kick on the halfway line, and Shane Duffy went up for the corner. I think it was about the 70th minute. We played it short and we ended up giving it for a throw-in on the halfway line to them. The fans were desperate for that ball to go in the box. And there was a little turning point in the game. Watching it on the TV, obviously I wasn't there, watching it on the TV, and you heard the fans roar, and it was someone chasing the ball down the channel. It was as simple as that. So they want to see the high energy. They want to see people press. They want to see action in a game. And it's difficult, especially international football, to sit deep. But if we are going to sit deep, have a plan to play through. And I just didn't see that yesterday. And we've got three games left now in the group. Next one's Azerbaijan. It's Portugal at home and right, and then Luxembourg. I'd expect at least 6 points, but I'd really want to see us play. I really want to see us right. Listen, we've got nothing to lose. Chances are, qualification's gone. We've got nothing to lose. This is how I want you to play. go and impose yourself on the team. Young boys, you're all going to get a chance. Be fearless on the ball. Go and show what you can do. And that's what, and I think that's what all Irish fans want to see, because although last night it was, we finished strongly by results and so what we used to do, which was put the ball in the box, get the second ball. And do you know what? It can work. We've seen down the years it can work. But I'd like to see the other side of it. I'd like to see us dominate in their half.
Well, two teenagers who've been remarkably impressive. Ask about Gavin Bisounou in goal, firstly. He's 19 years of age. He came through in the League of Ireland with Shamrock Rovers at 16. It was very clear that he was a top talent. Man City signed him. They've loaned him out over the last couple of seasons. He got his opportunity after Mark Travers made a couple of mistakes out in Serbia and Quevin Kelleher wasn't available. The last seven games, I think he's been excellent and barely put a foot wrong as a teenager. And last night was a real coming-of-age performance for him too. He's effectively retired a really good goalkeeper that you would have played alongside in Darren Randolph. And this kid's only 19.
I wouldn't say retired Darren Randolph just yet.
It'd be very tricky to get back in.
Very tricky to get back in, but football can change like that. You could have an injury. Darren can go and play and end up finding himself in the team somewhere and having an unbelievable season. Darren's been a great servant, so I wouldn't say effectively retiring Darren, but I would say he's took his chance. I would say the next game he's got to play. And he's been fantastic to watch. And it's brilliant. As I said all along, to see a young player like that come, and some players will go through the careers and a chance will never come, or they'll find themselves second string. And you find out about players when they get a chance, whether he's just gone alone to Portsmouth as well. You'll find out about players when they get a chance, whether they can turn up on a big occasion. Because there's plenty of good training players, there's plenty of players that'll do okay. But when the big occasions come round and you can rely on someone, I think, shown the past two games alone, he's someone that you can rely on. And it wasn't just the saves as well, it was his presence in the box, it was his coming for crosses, it was his punches, it was his talking to the back four. I was so impressed by him, and he's a great one for the future. And it's do you know what, and Stephen touched on the other keepers that were left out last night in his interview, and he's saying, you know, you've got other keepers to come back in as well, and he'd be looking at them, and maybe he thought, I've got to build them up a bit, because maybe they were ahead of Gavin before the last international break. But I'll tell you what, he's took his chance, and it'd be very, very difficult decision to leave him out after how he's been playing.
Another of your ex-teammates who has had huge redemption at the start of the season is Shane Duffy. Last year, a difficult year at Celtic, found himself back at Brighton and Hove Albion, weren't sure if he was going to go back out again. He gets into the Brighton team. He's played really well at the start of the Premier League season. I think he's had a really good window. Shane Duffy has looked back to his best. And some people wondered if Shane Duffy was going to be able to pass the ball. He has fit in perfectly to this team.
Tell you about Shane Duffy. Shane Duffy has a lot more quality than probably people have given credit for down the years. He can hit 70, 80-yard diags right onto someone's foot, and he can do those passes. Just allow him the chance to do so. He's at a team in Brighton that want to play football. He's gone to Celtic and he's had a really difficult time. But it just goes to show what type of person he is, what type of character he is, because he could easily have came back, tried to move from Brighton, but he wanted to stay and fight for his place. He's found himself in the team. And I'd say he's been one of the standout performers of the Premier League so far this year. In his performances, he's a threat in both boxes. You'd almost say he's the biggest threat at the moment for Ireland in set pieces. And he has been for a number of years. And there's nothing better than the centre-half that has that desire, that has that ability to attack it in both boxes. He's a diamond of a lad as well, and he's exactly what you want in that team, especially for the other boys coming through to learn off him as well. You've got a good core group of players in there: Seamus, James, Shane, Matt as well, that the other players can learn from. And if anyone's to look at ups and downs in his career, not everything's always going to go your way. He's a great example of it.
Well, you're one of those former players who's now speaking about the team, and James McLean had his say on ex-players and on the media during the week. He felt that the Irish media seemed to get a kick out of the Irish team not doing well, and he thinks that the Irish team actually enjoy when the side struggles. At any point during your career, Jonathan, do you actually feel that the Irish media were against the team at some point, or that there wasn't a supportive feeling behind the side?
Football's a results business. you've got to understand this as a footballer. You can't take it personally. You can't take markings in the paper personally. Anything like that. You can't take... Football's a game of opinions. You can have someone that's never played football in life have an opinion on you, and you can take it personally. You can let it get you down. I heard James's comments about younger boys need to be protected, but you also need to have a hard mentality. You need to have that tough mentality. Nowadays, they should be exposed to it because they're going to get it their whole lives. As a, if you want to be a player, you've got to deal with constant criticism.
Did you read much of it when you were a player? Would you have actually read the papers and maybe later in your career, say social media and website articles about the team, or when you were in camp, would you have ignored them entirely?
Would not bother me one bit. I'd read them, would not bother me one bit, because it's a game about opinions. The same with managers and players. Just because a player might not play in a team, that's only the manager's opinion of that player. He might go to another team and be an unbelievable player. I've had it down my career. Other players have had it. The same with media. But what I would say is, everyone wants Ireland to do well. And that's not a blast at James. Everyone wants Ireland to do well. But if you get the results and you qualify and you're up there, you want to do well. I think James is just seeing younger lads coming through and wants a bit of support for the team. But do you know what? You shouldn't look for support from the media. You shouldn't look for support from outside your circle. That's your circle of players, the management team, everyone else. Be strong enough as a group and learn for it and learn from it, because you're not going to get any help from the outside. And if people build you up, they'll build you up to knock you down as a player. There'll always be criticism, but the more you read it, the more you let it affect you, the worse it'll be for you, because you've got to be mentally strong to be a player. You've got to be. Football is a career of ups and downs. The best bit of advice I was ever given as a player was, there'll be so many highs, there'll be so many lows. Don't get carried away when you're doing well. Don't get too down when you're doing so badly, because things leave themselves out. You keep yourselves on a level head. You believe in yourself and you believe in the work you're putting in behind the scenes, and you believe in everything you're doing, and you're only accountable to yourself. You know, as a player, and you need a good look at yourself as a player, you know if you've done enough to be in a team. You know if you've done enough through a career, and if you're not on the team, what you need to do to get in the team. You're accountable to yourself. So don't worry about what people are saying. If you start caring about what other people think, you're in trouble.
Well, the wait for a first competitive win under Stephen Kenny continues. We'll see if it can be achieved in the next window. Jonathan, thanks a million for joining us on Off the Ball.
The Football Show on Off the Ball.
I'm prepared to do anything I can to play for my country again.
Do it then. What about your start to the game?
It wasn't bad, was it?
Why should an honest answer be a mistake?
How can a modern day manager not have a mobile phone?
Why should he?
Welcome along to the Football Show here on Off the Ball. A 1-1 draw secured with a late Irish equaliser after some pressure. Before that, Ireland having a little bit of a backs-of-the-wall performance, a good showing from a goalkeeper and some last-gasp defending. David Snead, that doesn't necessarily mean Serbia against the Republic of Ireland last night. That could have been any number of Irish performances over the last 10 years.
I was going to say, yeah, it's like the good old days, what?
Genuinely, though, like this, when Ireland get results like this against superior opposition, and Serbia are superior opposition, they might not have got to the Euros last year, but they have improved quite a bit since and have been really good in the group so far. Ireland up against it for large stages of last night's game, but they dug in for long enough with Gavin Bazunu pulling off a few heroics, and that meant that the stand of the last 10 minutes were possible. That's very much like games against Germany that I can remember, where Ireland were pinching results. Many of the best performances that Ireland have put in have been about being disciplined and then getting that equaliser. Nothing too different about last night.
Well, literally, nine on the head, and even talking of Serbia, like, I was in Portugal, in Faro, for the Portugal game last week. Serbia were a lot more impressive as a team, and how they operated and how they moved the ball, and even obviously defence into midfield, but then just obviously the attack too. And obviously they didn't get the win, but as a team, and in terms of just international football, it's all about getting that structure right and players buying into a system and just wholeheartedly actually it working. And that's what Serbia have done. Like, you know what I mean? Like, they are, I think it was something that Stephen Kenny kind of like touched upon, how much they've actually improved. And it's something that Ireland should be looking at in terms of how they're going to, how things will be moving forward. Hopefully, the plan that Kenny will be put in place, I don't think you have to look too much further than what Serbia have done in terms of the work that, and the infrastructure that they've put in over the last decade. And it is beginning to bear fruit. They've had a success at underage level. And listen, it tends to be one of them where, you know, you come against a country and they look to do well and you're like, oh, we have to just copy what they do. But they've actually done something that works for them. And I think further down the line, that's what's going to happen, you would imagine, and what has to happen now with Irish football. But listen, it's like the story of this whole campaign, and since Stephen Kenny has taken over, it's almost as if you can't have a discussion about the senior team and what the senior team are doing without what's happening on the overall grand scheme of things. But it is finally a topic and a discussion that is happening hand in hand, and not just at the end of a disappointing campaign. I do think people now are beginning to realise that there needs to be a bit more cohesive, joined up thinking. And if you look at the difference, between the two teams, not just in the players, but in terms of how teams are moulded and come together, it was quite evident of like the differences between the two nations, and why one will have maybe a bit more prolonged success, and why in the other, like in Ireland, will have to build for a bit longer.
Can I suggest one of the main reasons that Serbia are that bit further ahead is having a player like Dusan Tadic, who is able to vary up their attack. One thing that's really been missing, I think, for Ireland for quite some time, maybe even since Wes Hoolahan retired, is a type of player who can get his foot in the ball, get into those pockets of spaces around the number 10 position. Maybe in time that's going to be Troy Parrott, but Ireland haven't had that type of player for a while. So we're so reliant on getting the ball out wide, whipping in crosses, as opposed to maybe having a little bit more variety in the final third.
Yeah, no, listen, absolutely. Like you look at Dusan Tadic and just that role he plays in the team, and he's everywhere. And he's had a bit of a resurgence in his career, obviously, since leaving the Premier League and going to Ajax and being able to flourish a bit more, because it was a strange, and I don't think people would have seen him in the Premier League, and I don't think they would have had him pegged as quite that gifted of a player and who can be that influential. And yeah, like at the moment, like that is an issue, obviously, not having it was clear to obviously the lack of creativity that has been there for a while. But then you do have to find other ways around that. And I think there were times when Ireland did look dangerous. There were also times when they were cut open. And some of the general passing and the lingo play from Serbia was exceptional, really. And like it was hard not to look at them and being in awe is a bit much, but it was actually very enjoyable to watch, partly because Ireland had Gavin Bazunu who was stopping them from scoring goals.
Yeah, let's focus a bit on Gavin Bazunu here, because I know you went out to meet his mum and had a chat with his family last year, which you can probably talk about in a bit more detail in a moment. But last night he showed a great variety of skills for such a young goalkeeper at 19 years of age. We remember him coming through with Shamrock Rovers at 16, saving penalties in the League of Ireland at such a young age. But now, even just 3 years further on to his development, excellent with blocking the ball with his feet, made good saves down on either side. His distribution for the best part over these three games and over his seven starts so far has been excellent, with the exception of one pass he left short in Faro against Portugal. He is showing a tremendous amount of promise as a Republic of Ireland number one, despite just being a teenager.
Absolutely, and if you look at the start of this campaign, go back to the first game against Serbia, if it wasn't for an injury for Quirin Kelleher, it would have been Kelleher who maybe would have got the nod ahead of Gavin Bazunu. He showed last night, and it was, I don't know, I got the sense in the stadium there was an early pass again where he played it out. It was only in the first couple of minutes. I think it went to Omar Bamadele, and he passed it back in towards Shane Duffy, and Duffy miscontrolled it, and Vlahovic got in for a shot, and Bazunu got out and kind of just smothered the danger and made a good save. And then you're kind of thinking after that, there was a bit of nerve trying to play, so I won't be lying, I think people were beginning to get a bit anxious. And listen, it's only natural, because it's kind of like we're caught in two worlds at the moment between what Stephen Kenny and the coaching staff and even what the players that are there want to do and what had come before and what people are so used to seeing. And like, you don't even need this, like, obviously people talk about bravery in sport, but it's just bravery to encourage your convictions in terms of carrying out a game plan. And as that first half, pardon me, went on, he was the one who I felt actually was kind of like almost setting the team down. He was the one giving the players options. He was the one actually, like, you seen him and he was coming out, not just in and being in reckless positions, but he was giving, like, defenders and giving his fullbacks when they were under pressure an angle for an out ball. And the amount of times where they did trust them to actually give the ball back, like you saw one of the stats earlier today, that if you go back to the Luxembourg game, I think the ball was passed back to him maybe 10 times, whereas in this game it was over twice that. Wasn't it? I think it was actually between 25 and 28 times. So, like, you got a sense then that obviously that Luxembourg result was probably the nadir, obviously, at this point in the campaign. You get a sense now of the players now trusting, believing in them as well, and knowing that this kid is the real deal. And look, I picked it out. I actually ended up doing a piece that was focused on him just because of how the game turned out and for the 42. And there was a moment in the first half, and I just thought it was pretty critical, because I got the sense after that in the game where people, even in the crowd, just almost, it was like a sigh of relief or a sigh of just, oh, okay, you've got someone here. Is when ball was played back to him, put his foot on the ball, he was about to get closed down. Rather than just, and I was expecting him to do it, I'll be honest, rather than just maybe playing like out for touch or just clearing his lines, literally put his foot on the ball, rolled it a couple of yards to the right and pinged the ball out to Matt Doherty. Orling kept possession. And it was just that little moment that just relieved a small bit of pressure, brought that little sense of calm. And he did it throughout the game, made two excellent saves, world-class saves, I would say, from Alexander Mitrovic in the second half. And that, again, being in the stadium, it felt like a moment that, like, you sometimes get from like a midfielder or a striker to do something in a game that lifts the crowd. It was like the crowd visibly got behind what was happening in terms of, they realised, yeah, Ireland are under a bit of pressure here, but they've got someone special at the back here who's capable of keeping it out. And in those last few minutes when... I think I can't remember now, the left winger, pardon me, his name totally escapes me, broke when Conor Howden had lost the ball from Ireland's own short corner, and he had a great chance to kill the game 2-0. And again, he gets out, cuts the angle down, smothers the ball, gets it and releases an attack for Ireland, and a couple of minutes later Ireland equalised. And I got that sense in those last 15 minutes, and the crowd and the energy that was about the place, and even the players, and they all spoke about it after. It was just like, we're talking about messing with the good old days, but actually there's been very few nights of that. India, obviously, you talk about beating Germany, the world champions, absolutely sensational result, which was just incredible. And then again, the playoffs to get to the Euros when they just overpowered and just actually outclassed Bosnia. But in the recent times, it's been very few moments in the Aviva where it's actually felt like a football stadium with a bit of heart and soul. It's like felt absolutely soulless at times, no more so in the last couple of years when there has been no fans. And you just get the sense, I don't know, like, I just think at the moment with what's happening, like, I made this comparison earlier, and a lot of football fans might find it ridiculous in terms of the calibre, but do you remember when Jurgen Klopp was coming through when he first took over at Liverpool, and there was a serious disconnect between the club and the owners and everything that was happening, and he was trying to get that connection back, and he drew a game with West Brom, and he brings the players down in front of the cup, and he gets them to do like a bow, and the cop kind of saluted because I think he was saying the fans stuck by them.
And there was plenty of detractors about that at the time, David. I remember there was lots of slagging, yeah, this is a draw against here, West Brom.
Come here, listen, you're talking to culprit number one here. I thought it was absolutely ridiculous. But then you kind of get a sense and you get that feeling. You see what Klopp has done since. And listen, the parallels obviously will stop there in terms of the quality and all the rest of it. But I just think, especially with international football, and touch on some of the issues that will be facing Kenny with the players, and then when you go back to clubs, but they have to feel that connection. The fans have to feel that connection to a team and to a kind of a sense of purpose within it. And they can, listen, Ireland fans will have put up with a lot over the years, but I do think if Kenny can get that, where they actually they'll deal with maybe the odd hiccup here and there, so long as there is obviously progress, and that has to come, and let's be honest, results will have to come. But something like that, we saw him literally raising Gavin Bazunu's arm to the crowd at the end of the game. He obviously realised what it meant in terms of that result. And it could just be something we look back on. Might not, but it could be something that you look back on and think that could have been the formation. Because, like, there's people coming out of that game last night excited by some of those players. No one's blind to the issues that are still there. No one's going to be blind to the problems when the manager hasn't won a competitive game yet. But I don't think there'd be a single fan. I genuinely don't think there would have been a single fan coming out of that game thinking that there's nothing, something could be stored and with how of that manager can get the fans buying into that team. But also, and you hear it from the players, 100% behind the manager, because it's something that people have been alluding that it hasn't been the case, and it's clear that it is. And I just hope as time progresses that the progress on the pitch with the results do marry up, because ultimately that's what he will be judged on.
Yeah, well, Stephen Kenny, we all saw the banner in Kenny We Trust, which was put up on the Southern Stand, and the players and Kenny walked by it at the end, which created lots of photo opportunities. Well, Stephen Kenny spoke after the game, particularly after his comments midweek about him getting the team ready principally for the 2024 qualifiers for the European Championships. It has called into question, were the FAI on board with this? Was the previous FAI board who appointed Stephen Kenny, were they aware of this? What's Jonathan Hill's position? Stewie Byrne was saying to us in the commentary last evening that the FAI probably need to give a bit of clarity around the position of the team and whether it's about results now and building for the future. This is what Stephen Kenny had to say after the game about his current relationship with the FAI.
I have clear communication with key people in the FAI, and they've been nothing but supportive. And I think it's irrelevant if someone writes something in the back of a newspaper or whatever, that, you know, and then it becomes... sidelined by that. I need to remain focused on the job in hand, because ultimately players, you know, people have seen over the last week, they've seen some, you know, in the last few windows, some really talented players coming through. Yeah, the experienced players have shown in them a brilliant attitude. Listen, the 97-minute goal in Portugal, which would have been, you know, one of the great results, is our only defeat in six matches now. And but we haven't... we've been drawn too many. We need to start turning the draws into wins. And we've got the two games next month, and then we've got Portugal coming here and Luxembourg. So we've got Azerbaijan and Qatar. So they're good games. And a lot of good things from the week, really. But just, probably... Serbia overall could have deserved to win tonight. You know, they were exceptional, but we dug in, showed different type of qualities, and played a lot of good football as well, and had obviously two chances at the death to win it with Andrew's brilliant shot and Shane Duffy's header. But they were very good, I felt, Serbia overall.
David, just to pick up on Stephen Kenny's first kind of 20-30 seconds of that answer from the press conference, supporters can be guilty of going through a roller coaster on an international window. So at a point during the Portugal game, it was as if everything has clicked and things are going very well for the Republic of Ireland. A couple of goals are conceded, but everyone seems quite proud of the performance in Faro. Then there's a lot of disappointment about not beating Azerbaijan on Saturday, a certain sense of pessimism, and even in some of the newspapers, claims that Stephen Kenny's job is almost on the line with the game last night. And then there's the late equaliser, and everyone is elated and goes out of the window quite pleased by the fact that Ireland were able to salvage a draw. The FAI probably have to be clear, don't they, that it's not just about game by game here and what the next result is going to be in qualifying. That if what Stephen Kenny said midweek, that this is about a long-term project, the FAI have to endorse that, don't they?
Yeah, no, I think they do, absolutely. Especially because the nature of the whole discourse around Stephen Kenny at the moment is it's all focused on him. Seems to be camp of either pro or anti. It is trying to find that middle ground. And you have to remember as well, the current FAI and the board and the people who are running the show at the FAI weren't the ones who actually appointed Stephen Kenny. Remember this, it was obviously part of the succession plan that was in place when the former CEO kind of put this plan together. Obviously there's still people in and around the FAI who have maintained positions, but in terms of the decision makers, it is very much a new FAI. My understanding of the situation, and even from speaking, is that there is more support there for Stephen Kenny than has been made clear, partly because obviously there was three international games being played, so they're not going to come out maybe in the midst of all this when the games are over. There might be something that could be coming soon. I don't know. But in terms of if you look at this window just purely from a point of view of what's happened, they haven't won a game. They've drawn two, but look at that Portugal game, and the same people who are kind of maybe criticising and rightly so what happened against Azerbaijan, because I think he got his team wrong, and I think how the team set up what wasn't quite right. But in that Portugal game, I think part of the reason why people were so excited by it more so than that, and obviously to get the goal, even by the time he scored the goal, they could have been one down considering Portugal missed the penalty. Portugal had chances in that game, but it was seeing an Ireland team actually play very smart against a team who are far superior and pose an attacking threat in terms of on either flank and exposing to really Pepe and Ruben Dias being there. You could see the two of them being how uncomfortable they were and how they had clearly earmarked how you can get at on either flank, because the fullbacks for Portugal were pushing up, and whether it was there just maybe a bit of arrogance or just maybe feeling, well, we're going to be okay here. Ireland did pose a serious threat in that game. I think that's what a lot of people, not so much caught people by surprise, but it just kind of shows you that this is someone who knows how to put a tactical plan together, which, as Matt Doherty was discussing as well after the game last night, is something that the players have been seriously impressed by. And they were the ones talking about how they let themselves down against Azerbaijan in terms of what had been put out for them to do, etc. Now, it's at the moment, and I'm sure the fans and people listen, like it does be continually maybe tiresome from the point of view of every game. So it's almost as if every game he has to prove his credentials. But I don't think it's a case. Obviously, he has the second results. That's just, he needs results just to kind of maybe buy that time a little bit. But if said himself, rightly or wrongly, this was obviously Stephen Kenny saying this at the start of the week, that he said, and it was a bit of a departure because he hadn't said it before, and that needs to be made clear as well. It wasn't something that he laid out. Obviously, I think anyone could read between the lines, and it was pretty clear from the amount of players that he was bringing through that it was clear that that's what he was doing. He would have obviously hoped that not to have had an absolute nightmare of a result against Luxembourg, and in likes of Azerbaijan, he would have maybe been hoping that they would have had enough to get through those type of games just to keep kind of the wolves at bay a little bit. But yeah, no, without doubt, we do feel as if at this point it was just bringing a little bit of clarity, and we're just quieting a little bit of the noise down on both sides, because at some point it's not about just who the manager is, it's about everything else that's going with it and what's actually happening. And if he's given the time to actually progress things, well then I think that will bear fruit eventually. And if it is Euro 2024, well then so be it. It's not as if, I said this when he came in, it's not as if when he has taken this blueprint of continued success and enjoyment for Irish football and ripped it up and decided these are all wrong, I'm doing it this way. This is like, everyone's been talking about issues in Irish football for years, and getting to the Euros, the expanded Euros in obviously in 2016 and qualifying in 2012 too. That's great, and it was a joy to be there. But when there's still so many other problems, and you don't know when you're ever going to get back there again, because unless you spend big money on a big name manager, it's just all about then. Well, then it is what you said. It's like, well, where's the sustainability in that? We've seen where the FAI are now. We've seen how the FAI managed to have Giovanni Trapattoni as the manager in the fourth place. It wasn't because of the finances the FAI were generating. It was because they had a wealthy backer who was able to give them money. And likewise, when Martin O'Neill was in charge, and then even Mick McCarthy, who leaves at the end of a campaign. I think people forget this as well, that Mick McCarthy did receive a very, very lucrative payoff to leave during the campaign, obviously when COVID had disrupted the schedule. Like, it's almost as if people think he was like shafted in some way, and that the FAI were kind of just determined to get Kenny in, and that was it. Wasn't the case at all.
I would suggest as well, Mick McCarthy was more than happy to walk back and get a job in the championship. He went via Cyprus, but I think Mick McCarthy was already eyeing up his next employment anyway.
I don't know what Mick McCarthy's intentions were, but he came in as a troubleshooter effectively. Did a good job. But no one was there thinking this is the man to take Irish football forward for the next number of years. And I mentioned that at the start of the conversation, when you look at maybe Serbia and how in the 10 years that they kind of maybe formed their own kind of home-based academy and were really putting the structures in place to bring players through. If you look in the Ireland team we played yesterday, and it's been the same for... It has been the same for years, essentially, more so in recent years with the amount of more so League of Ireland graduates. But if you go through the likes of, say, Gavin Bazunu, obviously would have earned his crust with Shamrock Rovers and stayed here before Man City took and played in the Premier Division. Like, there's other lads in that back four alone, like in terms of, say, Matt Doherty, who obviously would have been with Bohemians before going to Wolves. There's like Shane Duffy, who was straight over to Everton at a young age. Again, Andrew Omar-Bamadeli being at Leixlip and then signing for Norwich. James McLean, who would have came through with Derry and then gone to Sunderland. You go through the like, these are lads who are they're finding their different pathways to getting to the first team, and that's fine, because I don't think you can just necessarily throw everything out and say, well, this is the one way we have to develop players and this is the only way we have to develop players. I think you have to accept that in the culture of Irish football and how it is that they are going to find different pathways. But I've never been more sure of myself that there has to be just a common thread at home here, be it through the FAI and the underage national teams, which has been happening, but also obviously with the League of Ireland academies and how they're properly funded, be it by government or the FAI, if that's possible. There has to be that common thread here that brings them through, that they know what's expected of them. You see someone like Josh Cullen, who would have came through West Ham and come through the, obviously the parentage drill and stuff. Like, you're always going to have these moments. Those avenues should never be shut off the players in terms of if they qualify to play and maybe haven't always been in that kind of environment that, here in Ireland. But it needs to be a case of they know what's expected of them and they know the common way to play, rather than lurching from one short-term vision of a manager to another.
What was interesting was
of delivering success.
We were chatting to Jonathan Walters a little bit earlier on, and John's involved currently with the Republic of Ireland under-19s, and for anyone who missed it, you can check it out on the podcast section on otbsports.com or have a look back in our social channels for the video. But he said at the 19s, they're prioritising the type of players that they have. So it's tactics dictated more by the players than by an overarching pathway. Is that something you feel has to change, David?
This is what I'm saying. So in terms of pathways, if you obviously if you work with your players, but I'd be very interested. You mentioned Dusan Tadic. Like, if you're working with as a coach, listen, John Walters is a qualified coach. This is where you have to bow to people who actually have the experience and have the knowledge. But you would imagine that if the way a team and a country want to play is comfortable in possession, tactically fluid, you still want to have that heart and the desire that we saw last night of a team. That should never be discarded for the sake of that. But you have to be able to like, it's like any country, you should be able to have it all, because it's very difficult to have it all. But you know what I mean? If you need to be able to have the coaches who can produce those technically gifted players, because they are there. Like, it's, again, it is there. You have to give them the environment here that they can thrive in. And that day-to-day environment at the moment, in terms of the League of Ireland academies that are now being pushed and backed by the FAI, at the moment there's so many such good work being done there, but they are still chasing their tail from years and years of having League of Ireland clubs, quite frankly, having no interest in doing that.
And the game has changed as well. Like, Brexit is going to be the game changer here. Once upon a time, the development pathway was, if a guy is good enough in his teenage years, he's going to end up in academy in the UK. There's going to be a pathway towards football, even if he drops down the pyramid after being at a top team. Now, because of the rules of players going across changing, and also just the sheer landscape of the way the academies are at the moment, David, where these clubs are now going out to pick the best players in the world as opposed to players in the British Isles, it's going to become more and more difficult for a player to come through at a top club in England. So we probably have to rethink about how we develop players here.
Well, absolutely, but this isn't a new obviously Brexit has been, it's been coming down the tracks for the last number of, for the last 5 years, what, 2016. Mm. It's only been in the last maybe year or so that actual the gravity of the situation has been known by clubs, and they kind of maybe thought that there would be kind of some kind of deal struck whereby you didn't have to be 18, but that is the case. And no, like, this is it, absolutely. Like, it's, you have to kind of find a way that I think suits the culture of a country. Like, I think I said this before, actually, I think we've been on the show, being on a show with Joe and Joe Malloy, and saying to Joe, I was like, I don't think it's necessarily you have to do, have an academy structure like what we have in England, because first of all, we haven't got the full-on infrastructure of clubs to properly do that. But also, if you look at how many stories there are of lads who do just get discarded, because it is an industry. Like football there is an industry. There does have to be that element to it here to produce players. It's the reason why Gavin Bazunu went to Manchester City, is because Sean McRovers has been creating an environment for young players where they can thrive, like Bohemians, like St. Patrick's Athletic, like Cork City, like Derry City, obviously, as well as Sligo Rovers. Like, these clubs now are trying to get ahead of it, but like, you see what happens in other countries, and I don't think it's necessarily a case of, right, get a lad in from the age of 11, 12 and just let him solely focus on football. Like, this is it. That's a moving to a much broader discussion on that, which would take up so much more time. But I just find that if Stephen Kenny and the FA are discussing, well, how do we do this? How do we actually change the system? It's finding a way of creating an environment that suits the culture for Irish people, because we've been so used to one thing for so long. It's going to be very difficult to just change everything overnight. So that's the challenge. As much as that now, that is the challenge, is creating that environment where people can say, well, okay, staying in Ireland isn't going to be detrimental to the elite players' progress. At the moment, as sad as it is to say, it will be. And that's just how we are at the moment. It's not because of a lack of trying. It's not because of a lack of a willingness to do it. It's just because Irish football is trying to catch up with where other countries have been for so long.
If I can bring the conversation back around to the goalkeepers to finish off on, Dave, we talked about Gavin Bazunu a bit earlier. Caoimhín Kelleher is the man who is currently waiting in the wings. With an injury to Alisson, we've got live coverage here and off the ball of Leeds against Liverpool this coming Sunday. It looks like Caoimhín Kelleher might get to play in goal for his club. He is currently relying to get first team football. And like, I thought Kelleher was really good in the friendly against Qatar back in the spring. He was injured at the wrong time for the Serbia game and Bazunu got a leg up on him. But these are probably the only times he's going to get to play first team football for Liverpool, is if Alisson is injured over the next while. Alisson's just signed a long-term contract. Liverpool see him as the number two. How much of a concern is it that Kelleher is probably going to have to wait quite a while to get game time at Liverpool and be a bit lucky, like it looks like it's going to be the case for this weekend?
It's a concern for him at the moment. It's not a concern for Ireland or Stephen Kenny, because Gavin Bazunu is the number one goalkeeper and he's playing football every week. So that's the harsh reality of it. Like, it is a concern for Kelleher. He made it, obviously, I think at the start of last season as well, where he picked up an injury too, where I think there was talk of him possibly going on loan to Holland, actually. And that kind of fell through because he picked up an injury. It's one of the positions that Ireland, like, you'd be hoping for years to come, you're going to have two of those goalkeepers who could be, in an ideal world, considering the clubs that they're at, could be the number ones for Manchester City and Liverpool, respectively. At the moment, they're a fair bit off that. When you look at the other players who are there, it's the bigger issue, I think, is the other players who we've been discussing who've had successful kind of windows and where they're at in terms of and playing, because it's again ties into just an issue for all international managers, is that unless you have players who are playing regularly, it's going to be very difficult to sustain momentum and build momentum when international windows come around and you're relying on lads who are only getting minutes here and there. Like, obviously, on the goalkeeping situation, it's bizarre when you think about it that we could have a goalkeeper playing for Liverpool in the Premier League who is the number two to a goalkeeper who'll be playing for Portsmouth. Mm. But that's just
Portsmouth, though.
Yeah, exactly. No, exactly. Crucially, 100%. And he's playing for Portsmouth, and people say, well, was it League One? But, like, let's be honest, he's in League One because of the age he's at. Like, Man City don't send, like, him out on loan at the age of 18 before that, obviously, as well, to Rochdale, and then keep him out on loan if they don't feel, you know, what he needs for first team environment. I think they realised very quickly that he was thriving in the environment at Manchester City, but needed to be playing first team games. It's the bigger issues you'll have is would be if you look at even like a couple of players who would have stood out over the course of this window would have been obviously making his full debut last night, Andrew Omobamadele. At the back end of last year, brilliant with Norwich, kind of got into the team kind of just past the halfway point of the season, maybe about just over a quarter of the season to go, and just kept his place, was tremendous. They won the league and was doing well in pre-season. He picked up a knock, missed the first game of the season. Norwich then obviously go out and buy another defender. He is now trying to get into that team again. Now, that's the challenge. He has to do it. If he's good enough and gets in, the Premier League is ruthless. That if he's performing better than someone else, he will get in. That's just the nature of the Premier League and of football. Again, Adam Eade, same situation. Yeah. Only made a couple of sub appearances. And these are the lads who are looking at thinking, they were so good, they were so impressive. But they're still obviously young and they're coming through, but they're not even playing regularly for their clubs. Yeah. And it's the same with Jeff Hendrick. We're kind of almost going. You kind of been going on a cycle because it's a conversation we've been having for the last number of years, and that's something that will be out of Stephen Kenny's control and Ireland's control. And if when you come into it and they're the players he trusts, that's going to be another challenge from his manager, is to be able to get those players. And he did it in spells for this window, particularly in that first game, and then in the latter stages of last night, where he was able to do that. And that's going to just, you would imagine, be another constant challenge for him.
Lee Carsley has been named, although I'm not sure.
He's not coming now, is he?
Well, that's the thing. Or Big Sam is the other one.
It's always Big Sam, isn't it?
OTB AM, live, weekday mornings from 7:30 on the OTB Sports app.